Good afternoon, Dr. Daniel Juarez, Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today is 11 March 2024. Now, we're going to be continuing on with our second mosaic, which, remember, is a patterning of my lecture, right? That's why I'm calling it a mosaic. And the pattern that we're developing here, and it doesn't mean we're going to be doing it, you know, ad infinitum. It only means I'm doing it now because I find it a good way to explain how multiple levels of integration of metabolism and biochemical regulation are completely understood within the living system. And when I say completely understood, that is a metaphor suggesting that the cell and the system, the cell that's in the tissue, that's in the organs, that's in the entire human body, because we're spending most of our time on human biochemistry, is functioning absolutely appropriately to maintain life. Until such time as the aging process catches up with the higher level regulation over the control of gene expression, both at the epigenetic level and at the level of potential for mutations and epistatic denial of interactions that results in tissue death and ultimately the death of the organism. The aging process is part of the living system. And I talked about that in great detail. I went through several aging lecture series with you in this podcast ensemble. Probably it's been a couple years now, but we can go back and do that. Just shoot me an email. Let me know if you'd like me to cover a topic a second time or a new topic. Remember, it's authenticbiochemistry@gmail.com. Now, the mosaics, though, are like taking a look through a lens of all the senses related to what's going on inside the living system. All of the lenses, meaning all the different potential phenomenological cues that one can generate, both from a dialectical analysis of how two components can interact with one another, generating a synthesis of interaction, and then looking at those various syntheses and comprising an overall picture of what's happening inside the living system. And so taking accounting of a specific metabolite like a plasmalogen might seem arbitrary, but it's not, because plasmalogens have been in the biochemical, physiology, biomedical literature for half a century, maybe not that long, but close to it. And the reason we find that, we obtain that in the literature, is because plasmalogens are linked to peroxisomes, and peroxisomes are those organelles which don't get as much attention as the nucleus or the mitochondrion or even the endoplasmic reticulum or the Golgi or, you know, the endosome, the lysosome. However, the peroxisomes play an absolutely essential role in the living system, not only because of their function. We're going to go over their function in detail again before we finish the plasmalogen mosaic, just to make sure you understand all the different oxidative metabolism that is H2O2 derivative and therefore catalase dependent. In the living cells, in the mammalian cell, in humans in particular, but also because it appears to be involved in this whole endomembranous network of communication that I spent a lot of time talking about over a year ago, and I published a paper on, review article I called it, right? Okay, so I wanted to bring that forward to you because this is going to be what I'm calling book two of Mosaic to Plasmalogens. It's also simply just chapter 9. Okay, so it's my way of organizing these lectures. So plasmalogen biosynthesis, remember, is initiated in the peroxisomal matrix, where the enzyme GNPAT, that's the glycerone phosphate oxygen acyl transferase, which has another name that I prefer, the dihydroxyacetone phosphate acyl transferase, catalyzes the synthesis of the acyl DHAP, which then becomes metabolized, the second reaction, to the alkyl DHAP by that all-important enzyme, alkyl glycerone phosphate synthase, AGPS. Remember, that's a replacement of the fatty acid with a long-chain fatty alcohol, right? In the one position generating the ether linkage. Now, the activity of that GNPAT and the AGPS, neither of those activities is elevated in an AGPS deficient and GNPA deficient cell lineage when those experiments have been carried out. Okay? There is an increase, however, in the fatty acid reductase and the very important accumulation of the fatty alcohol, which is, of course, the product of the reaction. So that happens in plasmalogen deficient cells. Now, what does that tell you? It sounds like that's the key enzymatic activity to regulate plasmalogen mole percent in the membrane, not those two enzymes that are initiating the synthesis. Okay. Now, that makes sense to me for a lot of reasons. For one, it's just adding a fatty acid to a glycerol backbone, even if it happens to be a ketone, is not something unique in the cell. And even, I would argue, transferring that fatty acid out just by a transferase, right? Because that's all it is, an acyl transferase, for an ester linkage to a ether linkage. It's another thing that isn't unique to all other possible biochemical reactions in the cell. But that reductase generating that fatty alcohol in the peroxisome, okay? Remember, it's in the peroxisome, but it's when the peroxisome is adherent to the endoplasmic reticulum, okay? So there's a contact communication going on there. So peroxisome is there, but it's tethered to the ER, just like we talked about mitochondria being tethered to the ER when we were talking about what? Mitophagy. Remember fission and fusion and all that too, right? Yeah, okay. That's linked to this too, because peroxisomes go through the same thing. There is pexophagy, right? Or peroxophagy. Anyway, it seems, therefore, that this FAR enzyme, fatty acid reductase, is the rate limiting. Okay, so I want to make that, I want to bring that home as often as I can. Now, interestingly, that the level of FAR1, the polypeptide, is correlated with the level of the fatty alcohol that appears to be required for the synthesis of the composite mole percent plasmalogens in the inner plasma membrane protein. Now, restoration of plasmalogens by taking cells that are deficient in plasmalogen in their membranes with purified plasmalogens or their analogs can elevate the protein level of FAR1. Now, that's interesting, right? But listen to this. Remember, you're coming off, though, of being deficient. So plasmalogens are built up now. Plasmalogens come on the scene because you're artificially introducing them to the cells in culture. But that's not enough, because what happens then is you get an elevation of FAR1, the reductase. Now, what's really interesting here, it's not a transcriptional event. You just see more of the polypeptide. So that could mean two things. Transcript that has not been degraded is reutilized to translate from the mRNA to the FAR1 protein via translation. Or that the stability, that have to do with the stability of that RNA. Remember, that goes back to our circular RNA discussion. Okay? So that's why it's a mosaic. I'm bringing all this together to you. But it all can be understood. You just have to focus, remember, and study, right? Kind of like what the Stoics do. Although I'm no Stoic, believe me. But it's part of the process of how they carry out the characterization of reasoning, right? Anyway, point is this. The message isn't increased, yet you get more protein. It could also mean that the protein is just sequestered. Or maybe it's bound to another protein, regulating it, or to a ligand, like a low molecular mass molecule. Okay? It has yet to been determined. I don't know. I mean, that's not in the literature as yet, right? But it's very interesting that if you get a missense mutation in the FAR1, that will inhibit FAR1 degradation and increase plasmalogens. So even if there's a problem with the DNA, somehow the level of that FAR1 protein is maintained. No degradation of the polypeptide, and yet you can still get a continuum of increase in plasmalogen biosynthesis in molar center of the membrane. I mean, of course, eventually that will end when the protein turns over, but it means it has to do with the stability of the polypeptide too. Right? But I'm guessing it's a lot more complex than that. And it has to do with maybe some chaperone activity with that protein or endomembranous sequestering, maintaining its integrity and preventing it from being proteolytically degraded and turning over. It's a very interesting level of regulation when you think about it. Much deeper regulation, even like when we talked about phosphofructor kinase 1, right? Which is a nice paradigm for the regulation of enzymatic activity, controlling pathways, controlling cellular, well, for that particular situation, anabolism and just bioenergetics, right? Okay, now let's continue on here. Fatty acyl-CoA reductase, FAR1, is ubiquitously expressed in the peroxisomal membrane. Again, close association with the ER, as I keep on saying. And it generates fatty alcohols that are required for the ethyl lipid synthesis. You know this. Now, lipid droplet localization of the human FAR1 has been observed using microscopy. Now, this is under conditions of increased triacylglycerol metabolism. Of course, lipid droplet localization would then enhance maybe the mobility of the FAR1 protein, which already resides in the membrane. But that's unusual, right? That's an interesting phenomenon because it seems to suggest that there is a very close association with subcellular regulation of that enzyme relative to overt lipid metabolism, including something like triacylglycerol, the neutral storage lipid. Right? So, further studies go on to show that FAR1 is able to take on two different membrane topologies, differing in the orientation of what's known as the short hydrophilic carboxy terminus, either towards the lumen or the cytoplasm, respectively, those two membrane topologies, okay, because of that hydrophilic carboxy terminus. So two closely associated hydrophobic domains are also held within the carboxy terminal region. And the second domain was sufficient in a study conducted, and I'll give you the citation, it was published in Journal of Cell Science, was sufficient for the localization to the lipid droplet. That's right. The FAR1 protein goes to the lipid droplet, which is not an organelle. It's a lipid droplet, triacylglycerol. It does have a perilipid membrane, though, a unit membrane. So That's a very curious thing, because even when there is a corruption, a knockout of that PEX pathway, which regulates the movement of proteins into the peroxisome. Remember the PEX 4, PEX 14, and now the PEX 19 we're talking about. It doesn't seem to have any effect on what the FAR1 is doing in terms of translocation between a lipid drop because of increases in triglycerol and its normal location on that plasma membrane. But obviously it has something to do with that hydrophilic carboxy terminus regulation. Okay. So this FAR1 protein is very, very unusual, just as a polypeptide, because it has a dual topological membrane association. And it also suggests that it can subcellularly localize without much problem to either directly a peroxisomal membrane or a non-organelle or lipid droplet in the cytoplasm. Okay? It's a kind of an exclusive place for that enzyme, the FAR1. And remember what I was saying before about maybe that protein sequestered and regulated that way? And that's why even when the transcript disappears or is not altered by plasmalogen deficiency, that protein is somehow conserved and we get higher activity? It could have to do with co-localizing to something as simple as a lipid pool. And it doesn't have to be triacylglycerol, because not all cells are going to have a robust amount of oil droplets. Some will. Some muscle cells, of course. Liver cells, of course. Lots of other cells will do. Adipose, big time, right? But this protein's all over. It's all over the map. It's in the CNS, right? So it's got to be something more like maybe endomembranous, maybe lipid raft association. I don't know. It's just an idea. Okay. Now, remember the localization of the plasmalogens themselves are on the outer leaflet of the cell membrane, the plasma membrane. And remember I told you that was augmented by lowering the expression of that CDC50A. And that protein is a beta subunit of a so-called P4ATPase, which functions as a flipase. But that protein has to exit its normal locale, which is the ER. And the way it moves is by forming a heterooligomer. Okay. This is another whole very fascinating level of regulation of the peroxisomal activity, because it's linked up to how proteins move into the peroxisome, right? Including this one. And one of these proteins, the one we're talking about right here, this ATP, flips this unusual phosphoglycerolipid, these plasmalogens, from the inner to the outer or the outer to the inner leaflet of the plasma membrane. And that's a whole level of regulation for the entire cellular milieu that we've been talking about for the last 8, now 9 lectures. Now, what about the brain? Plasmalogens in the CNS are synthesized in the CNS. Now, there's some question of whether or not the major synthesis is in microglia. Remember, those are the resident macrophage immune cells, but they're also glial cells, right? So they have other functions. Maybe even other glial cells in the brain, or, of course, neurons, right? But clearly, we find plasmalogens in all those cell types. So FAR1-mediated regulation a plasmalogen synthesis in the CNS is also going to be something we need to study, because plasmalogens are playing whatever unique role they may have in neurotransmission. To name one, yeah, I guess sort of important systems dependent in the CNS process. Now, FAR1 protein is found in the cerebellum. Now, we're going to have to talk about mice studies, right? In a GNPAT KO mouse. Now, remember that the initial enzyme just adding the fatty acid, right? To dihydroxyacetone phosphate, right? And the mouse model with a deletion of the gene encoding the carboxy terminus portion of that translocator receptor protein known as PEX-14. So in this paper, they call that a PEX-14 delta C slash delta C. You know, the nomenclature you just have to follow and you have to accept it. Now, in that system, the import of peroxisomal matrix proteins like the AGPS and even enzymes like catalase, which is important to remove the H2O2 produced during the oxidation phase of fatty acids in the peroxisome, among other molecules like amino acids, which can be oxidized, that will corrupt movement of AGPS and catalase in partially defective processing, and the plasmalogens themselves also. The level of plasmalogen mole percent in the membrane is reduced. Okay, which makes sense, right? Now, the catabolic functions of peroxisomes, the H2O2 that's produced in the peroxisome is going to be decomposed within that organelle, and it can reach levels as high as 40 to 50 milligram per ml. So that'd be a toxic level. So the peroxisome is really keeping the cell alive by not allowing H2O2 to diffuse through its membrane because it's quickly removed, right? Now, there's a lot of oxidation in the peroxisome because it will oxidize amino acids, both D and L amino acids, but also alpha hydroxycarboxylic acids, urate, and such things as glutaryl CoA and oxalate and lots of other CoA derivatives, including polyamines. Each of those processes, you're going to have 2H2O2. Okay. And that's going to ultimately be removed to generate water and oxygen. Okay. Now, ethanol also gets oxidized. Okay. In the peroxisome via unusual sort of reaction mechanism. So all of this is considered a component of peroxisomal respiration because you have catalase converting two hydrogen peroxide, H2O2s, to molecular oxygen and to two H2Os. And that reaction will use one H2O2 to oxidize a substrate peroxidatively to its product, right? Its more oxidized product, whatever that happens to be. Okay, so it again, amino acids are just one case in point. So that's all just a component of what's going on in the peroxisome. Understand this. But the reason we're talking about it now, you know, some of the details of what's going on in the peroxisome, besides the fascinating nature of plasmalogens, is because they're linked to all these processes. Because plasmalogens are linked to the import of proteins into the peroxisome, including that enzyme that's so important to remove H2O2, catalase. Also, the oxidases themselves, which generate H2O2, are unique to the peroxisome. And by the way, why all this oxidation in the peroxisome of maybe D amino acids, maybe that makes sense because they're relatively rare, but they do exist, as you know. And also D amino acids can be found in what? Pathogen invasion, right? So they're being maybe detoxed that way, D amino acids. But why L amino acids? The normal amino acids also being oxidized in the peroxisome. So see, that process is linked to many other processes, one of which is the beta oxidation of the fatty acids in the peroxisome. Told you that happens. Now, the beta oxidation of the fatty acids in the peroxisome that I told you seems to be linked to the turnover of very long-chain fatty acids, very long-chain PUFAs, polyunsaturated fatty acids, in the plasma membrane and in other intermembranous systems. Now, yet that's the case. The beta oxidation process in the peroxisome actually has a higher rate of activity for saturated fatty acids or monounsaturated fatty acids like oleate. But it will nevertheless catabolize the beta oxidation process for PUFAs via a very long chain polyunsaturated fatty acids. And since that may be the major substrate for the peroxisome, because it's turning over these potentially damaged fatty acids because of all the double bonds that could have been peroxidized during simply membrane in situ residence. Right? So that's a turnover. So it could be the H2O2 functioning linked to the catalase and linked to the removal of the amino acids. Those could be co-substrate mediated events, you see, regulating a whole other pathway organization that the peroxisome delivers to the rest of the cell. And there are plenty of candidates for this complex delivery system, and we'll go through it before we're finished with this mosaic. I promise. I'm just giving you, you know, a little taste of the complexity of this, right? If you haven't already accepted that that's the case, right? Now, contrary to the elevation of plasmalogens in the periphery, which is what we've been concentrating on, increased level of plasmalogens in the brain, in the CNS, cannot be demonstrated by adding alkyl glycerol. Remember, that's how they were doing those experiments, the previous study, right? So that's kind of interesting, right? That would be essentially what? A precursor for the sense-restricted plasmalogen, which is the finer vinyl-linked ether lipid with that oxidate, with that reduction of that ketone function at the 2 position is well taken care of, and presumably a fatty acid loaded on there like a VLC PUFA. Now, here's something maybe you didn't know. Plasmalogens are super abundant in the myelin sheath. And indeed, homeostasis of those plasmalogens seems to be very important for the activity of myelination of those exons. And that, of course, is not a stochastic event in the CNS. It's regionally specific, which means plasmalogens are playing a regio-specific role in myelination because they are there delivered to the myelin sheath, right? So all of this is now giving you a whole new thing to think about, the CNS. Furthermore, plasmalogens are essential for the differentiation of Schwann cells and for the process of myelination involving the all-important AKT signaling pathway, which is a component of myelination. And in fact, the complete absence of plasmalogens, which of course you can do in cells, together with a decrease of the myelin basic protein, that's called the MBP, will definitely inhibit the formation of the myelin sheath. So plasmalogens are functioning with the MBP, the myelin basic protein. Now, there's more on that later, don't worry. I'll tell you one thing about MBP and then we'll stop because I think we're almost finished. Let me see here. Oh yeah, quickly. MBP is important for initiating and driving axon wrapping, myelin compaction, and the maintenance of the stability, the biochemical stability of the sheath. That is the myelin sheath, right? Okay, so now you got another player to bring in, right? You got plasmalogens and MBP playing a role in myelination in the CNS. So we're going to go back and forth looking at mouse studies and cellular studies in vitro. But don't worry, we're going to link this all back ultimately to the clinic. Okay, because there are many disorders in peroxisome biology, and some of them are going to be linked directly to what we're talking about right now. All right. So we're going to leave you with that on a Monday afternoon. On the 11th of March, 2024, this is Dr. Dan Guerra saying, have a pleasant Monday evening and bye for now.